Good evening and welcome to another episode of Cheater and the Root. I am Jeff Christ, the author of Get Rich Cheating. And tonight, we will once again throw the microphone over to our friends at Where the F Are We? Because they have some important things to tell you about Afghanistan, which is where one of them, our friend Bernard Poulton, has been stationed. Is that what you call that one? Someone in the armed services serves? Yeah, real military guy is going to tell you about what's going on in Afghanistan. Enjoy their take on it. Cheater and the Root will be back in its fully fleshed entirety shortly. I love you guys. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Hey everybody, welcome to Where the Fuck Are We? The foreign affairs show that asks the three most important questions for Americans.
Where the fuck are we? Why the fuck are we there? And what the fuck does it have to do with me?
I'm Kevin Janis.
I'm Benari Poulton.
And who the fuck are we? Barry, tell them who we are!
Benari Poulton is a writer and comedian, an adjunct professor at Cal State Fullerton, and a master sergeant in the U.S. Army Reserve, where he is affectionately known as G.I. Jew. Kevin Janis, in addition to being a very funny comedian and writer himself, is a fancy New York-based litigator, a Canadian, and like all Canadians, an expert at being foreign.
Thanks, Barry. And where the fuck are we this week, Kevin?
We're in Afghanistan.
And why the fuck are we there?
Well, a bilateral security agreement between the U.S. and Afghanistan is taking shape, and it looks like we're finally bringing home the troops in 2024.
Well, let's be fair. It could be 2020. It could be the 24th and a half century. We just don't know for sure.
To talk about all this, we're very fortunate to have Benari here, who, as a master sergeant in the U.S. Army, spent a year in Kandahar and surrounding Afghan provinces.
Yes, we're very fortunate that happened. Lucky break for me. And, of course, my opinions here are my own and in no way reflect those of the U.S. Army, the U.S. government, allied forces, or anyone else other than me. So there we go.
Yeah, who's the lawyer with this disclaimer? So look, because we're looking at what could be quite a long haul, it's probably a very good time to get to know Afghanistan a little bit better.
Sure, let's cram thousands of years of history into a highlight reel. This ain't history. This is the Blitstery!
Thus spake Zarathustra, and he puts what is now northern Afghanistan on the map as the home of the Zoroastrian religion in the 5th century BC.
Ancient Afghanistan puts up quite a fight in 330 BC when Alexander the Great invades, but by 327 BC, the Great One has it conquered along with most of the ancient world.
The Zoroastrian, Greek, Hellenistic, Buddhist, and Hindu cultures all battle it out well into the 5th century AD.
But here comes Islam! And by the 11th century, Afghanistan becomes the center of the Muslim world during the Islamic Golden Age.
1219, the wrath of Genghis Khan.
Khan
and his Mongol hordes lay waste to the region.
1709, Mirwais Hotak, considered Afghanistan's George Washington, leads a stunning upset victory over the Persians and declares southern Afghanistan an independent kingdom.
The great game comes in the 19th century when Imperial Russia and the British Empire in India vie for control. The British crown installs a king, and they could go all the way!
But in 1842, Afghans assassinate the king and slaughter the British and Indian troops.
1880, a treaty gives the Brits control of Afghan foreign affairs.
But in 1919, Amir Amanullah Khan breaks free from the Brits.
But when he tries to bring social reforms to Afghanistan in the 20s, he's forced off the field. Zahir Shah takes the reins.
1973, it's a coup! General Mohammad Daud seizes power, declares a republic, and pits the Soviets against Western powers.
But in 1978, down goes Daud, and it's Russians in Afghanistan.
That'll make a nifty Billy Joel lyric a few years later.
By 1985, the U.S.-backed Mujahideen take on the Soviets.
1989, the Red Army is out of there.
And here comes the Taliban in 1996.
These hardline Islamists apply retro innovation to Afghanistan.
Like banning women from work and bringing back stoning.
But after 9/11, the U.S. takes the fight to Al-Qaeda, leading the NATO strike that topples the Taliban.
Hamid Karzai takes control, and in 2004, he's elected president.
A spike in violence mars the 2009 re-election of Karzai, and President Obama boosts U.S. troop levels by 30,000.
Bad news for Benari, who ships off to Afghanistan in 2011.
June 2013, Afghan forces take over all security operations from NATO.
Which brings us to the latest security agreement being hammered out with the U.S. as we speak. Who knows what the future will bring, but you'll hear about it all right here on the Blitzstream.
Oh, man.
Okay, so putting aside the fact that this security agreement could keep the U.S. there possibly forever, this BSA is kind of a landmark achievement, right?
Well, it's certainly a positive step forward. It establishes support and training roles for U.S. forces, and it clarifies the rules for the future relationship between the two countries.
And according to the media, all Obama has to do is apologize for everything that's happened in the last 12 years.
Right, right. That's all he has to do. Of course, that's not actually part of any agreement.
Really? Well, so that someone from the administration should really clarify this apology.
I know, and I think that's probably why everyone from the administration is addressing it. Here's Secretary of State John Kerry.
I honestly don't know where the idea of an apology started, but let me be clear. President Karzai didn't ask for an apology. There was no discussion of an apology. It's just not even on the table.
Well, that's weird, because I keep hearing about Hamid Karzai wanting an apology letter from President Obama.
Now, Kevin, what kind of reputable news organization would perpetuate such irresponsible misinformation?
One of the requirements that the Afghans have made is they want a formal apology from the President of the United States. Is the President ready to apologize to Afghanistan in order to keep U.S. troops on the ground there?
No, Wolf. I've seen those reports. I have no idea where they come from.
Oh, Wolf. The Situation Room.
Yeah, it's a situation, all right.
It's certainly a situation.
But the non-existent apology aside, there's still, you know, friction between the U.S. and President Karzai.
That's an understatement. Okay, here's something that Karzai actually said during a meeting with tribal leaders in Kabul. Okay, quote, "My trust with America is not good. I don't trust them, and they don't trust me. During the past 10 years, I have fought with them, and they have made propaganda against me."
Yeah, that's a rock-solid ally there. I just can't figure out why Karzai would feel that way, of course.
If Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, doesn't feel like apologizing, then I think we should say goodbye and good luck. We don't need to be here risking our lives and wasting our money on somebody who doesn't care.
It's Karzai I don't respect. Karzai is a corrupt and incompetent leader.
Having to deal with this corrupt prima donna who heads that country.
I mean, Karzai won re-election by massive fraud. I think that's been pretty well established. He and his brother are corrupt. I think that's pretty well established.
Oh, man.
Maybe Karzai has some reason to feel a little tension with America.
Well, I think that's pretty well established. But, you know, it's not like any American politician ever threatened his life or anything.
President Hamid Karzai, you are a corrupt, unbelievably brazen beneficiary of American taxpayers' largesse. We should choke you out with the same hand and leave you lifeless on the nearest dirty, rutted street of your rubble capital.
Wow.
That was disgraced ex-San Diego mayor Roger Hedgecock.
The other disgraced San Diego mayor.
Right. This wasn't the San Diego mayor who was forced out of office for sexual harassment recently.
No. This is the San Diego mayor that was forced from office for several felonies related to illegal campaign funds.
Yeah, so this guy knows a little something about being a corrupt, unbelievably brazen beneficiary of American taxpayers' largesse. He's now a conservative talk show host.
Perfect. And, Kevin, what's with disgraced mayors and violent threats, eh?
I'll rip his fucking throat out. I'll poke his eyes out.
you gotta get your shot in, don't you? Bringing it back to Toronto, my hometown. Well, getting back to Afghanistan and all this talk about trust. I mean, this is the way you talk about an ex. This is like a divorce.
Well, that's kind of what's happening, right? You know, Afghanistan and the U.S. are in that messy breakup period.
We're only staying together for the kids. But we absolutely do not trust each other.
Yeah, we don't even really like each other very much anymore.
But, you know, the thing about Karzai is he's always playing all sides, right? He's playing all sides here. Sometimes he's in bed with us.
Yeah, well, he's in bed with us, but we keep waking up in the morning, the Taliban sneaking out the back door.
Yeah, I found a pair of uranium-enriched earrings here.
Oh, no, baby. That was left over from when Russia was here. Don't worry about it. That's in the past.
Okay. So what's really going on here? Because, look, Karzai agreed, and he even convened a special Loya Jirga, which is an assembly, and there's 3,000 members, and it wasn't even required under Afghan law.
Right.
The Loya Jirga approves it and wants it implemented immediately, but now Karzai is saying he wants to delay the agreement until after elections in April. What's going on here?
Well, you know, I think that Afghanistan wants to make this work, and I think Karzai wants to make this work, but this just seems like a classic case of political posturing now. You know, Karzai used the Loya Jirga to test the waters. Now he knows that there's definitely political support for the agreement.
Right.
So he can just posture and stand up to the U.S. now as he runs out his term. And he knows that at the end of it, there's an agreement. And so ultimately, there's really just too much money at stake here. The gravy train might get disrupted.
Rob Ford's slogan was stop the gravy train. Hamid Karzai's slogan is don't stop the gravy train.
Exactly. And you know who does want to stop the gravy train in Afghanistan?
Wait a minute. In this scenario, the Taliban is basically Rob Ford?
I'll rip his fucking throat out. I'll poke his eyes out.
Your words, not mine. This is all a cultural issue. I think Karzai wants this agreement badly. He just can't make it seem like he wants it. You know,
right.
he can't show weakness here. He needs to project strength to his people.
Well, Canadian politicians, speaking of Canadian politicians, do this all the time with the U.S. They quickly reach agreement on everything the U.S. wants, and then they spend the next year in the House of Commons railing against the great American Satan to pander to Canadians' latent anti-Americanism.
Right. So basically, Afghanistan is just Canada. So that's the
yes,
lesson.
That's exactly what I just said. Well, look, with Rob Ford there, I mean, come on.
Well, you know, I think that Afghanistan's government is just slightly less defective right now. One thing I learned from being in Afghanistan is that these cultural considerations are crucial to Afghans.
Well, you can thank the U.S. Army for that. I hear their cultural sensitivity training is second to none.
Yes. Yes. You're talking about the cultural sensitivity training that I underwent when they showed us a clip from Rambo 3.
That story is so great. Which clip did they show you again? Was it, who are you?
Your worst nightmare.
No. They didn't give us Rambo's catchphrase. So basically, we're going through our sensitivity training as we're getting ready to deploy to Afghanistan. And
right.
One of the things that we're told about is an Afghan game called Buzkazi, where it's basically like polo. They ride around on horses, except instead of a ball, they use a dead goat's head. This is what they want us to know about. And in Rambo 3, there's an entire scene where Rambo takes a break from single-handedly defeating Russia to play this game. And that's what they show us. So this is how they get us ready for a year-long deployment in Afghanistan. Now, to be fair, in terms of American films about Afghanistan, it was either Rambo 3 or Spies Like Us, so...
Look, the Army was just making sure you were culturally sensitive to the local sports scene. You know, actually, Rambo 3 contains my favorite analysis of Afghanistan ever.
This is Afghanistan. Alexander the Great tried to conquer this country. Then Genghis Khan. Then the British. Now Russia. But Afghan people fight hard. They never be defeated. Ancient enemy, make prayer about these people. You wish to hear?
Mm-hmm.
Very good. It says, may God deliver us from the venom of the cobra, teeth of the tiger, and the vengeance of the Afghan. You understand what this means?
The that you guys don't take any shit.
See? This is the clip they should have used, because that is actually shockingly accurate. So good on you, Sly Stallone.
I feel so culturally sensitive right now. Speaking of culturally sensitive, did you know that at the time, Rambo 3 was deemed the most violent film ever made? It had 221 acts of violence, at least 70 explosions, and over 108 characters killed on screen.
Again, shockingly accurate for a movie taking place in Afghanistan. But look, in spite of all that, I think this security agreement has reason to be surprisingly optimistic for the future of Afghanistan right now.
Well, that's cool to hear.
Hey, the fact that there's even an agreement at all is huge progress, because despite all the media chatter about this, you know, the U.S. isn't really giving up anything. We're not, except for, you know, troops on the ground, but they're not giving an apology. They're not giving up the ability to enter private houses for counterterrorism operations. They're ending combat missions there. They're right. Looking to normalize relationships. And I think everyone just assumed that this was going to be like Iraq, where no agreement was reached and the U.S. just
right.
left. And I think everyone expected a complete shit show.
Well, when it comes to Afghanistan, everyone immediately expects a complete shit show.
But that's just it. Look, Afghanistan was a shit show long before the U.S. ever got there. And it's always been a shit show. As much as, you know, Americans would love to believe that we're both Afghanistan's biggest problem and its greatest solution, you know, that's not really true. You know, it was a shit show for a long, long time.
We heard a whole lot of shit show in the Blitztree.
Yeah. All you need to remember is that it took Alexander the Great 6 months to conquer Persia, but it took him 3 years to conquer Afghanistan, and he only held on to it for 3 months.
I don't really understand that. Rambo did it in 2 days.
Yeah, well, Alexander the Great was no John Rambo. It was such a shit show in Afghanistan that even people who were supposed to get along don't get along. There were 2 Jews left in all of Afghanistan, and they hated each other.
It's crazy enough to think that there were only 2 Jews left in all of Afghanistan, but the fact that they hated each other kind of sums up Afghanistan in a nutshell.
Oh, yeah. They did a documentary about it, and we here's an actual clip from one of their epic fights. They're yelling at each other from across a courtyard. They're not even in the same building.
Well, and the one guy is saying, I'm not even talking about you. I'm talking about someone completely different. I'm not talking about you. Not everything I say or do has anything to do with you. I love that the one guy's biggest insult is to call the other one a goy.
He calls him a triple goy.
And a debauched goy.
Yeah, and then he's like, well, what do you want me to call me? A wizard? Call me a sorcerer?
Like, oh, yeah.
Their insults are great. But, you know,
it's pretty amazing stuff. We'll post that on the Tumblr.
Yeah, I love these guys. These are my people.
Well, you are G.I. Jew. But, okay, so speaking of G.I. Jew, let's come back to your deployment. And staying positive, so this agreement has you surprisingly optimistic. Which is pretty significant because, look, it's been over 12 years. You were there. Hundreds of thousands of American soldiers like yourself have proudly served in Afghanistan. Billions of American taxpayer dollars have been spent, and so much time is spent by the media focusing on the shit show. And I think that's something that people really want to know. Are there other things that you're optimistic about?
You have to take the long-haul approach to what's going on in Afghanistan. And this might seem counterintuitive, but one thing that I'm pretty optimistic about, and people really aren't talking about it much, it's the rise of pop culture in Afghanistan.
No, that is really interesting. You're talking about the Moby Group and Tolo TV.
13, 14 years ago, there was no TV. None. The Taliban outlawed it. Most people couldn't afford it. And now they have radio stations and TV stations, and they have programming on there that isn't just propaganda. You know, they have pop culture shows, like we have in America. And we take for granted how influential and transformative television can be in a culture.
Well, there is a lot of mindless entertainment out there.
Yes, but sometimes you need that, you know, especially when there's a lot of shit blowing up around you. You know, sometimes you need some escapism, and we take that luxury for granted.
That's very true.
But in Afghanistan, you know, it's not just escapism. I really think that, you know, what's happening is a direct reflection of freedom and progress in the region.
Yeah, that's exactly how the Moby Group describes what they're doing. One of their most popular shows, and this is amazing, is a version of The Voice. Like Christina Aguilera's The Voice. It's identical. You've got the judges. It looks the same. It's amazing. Here's a clip.
How are you? Welcome to The Voice Agenda Ariana Said. You are beautiful.
You're beautiful.
Beautiful.
Cool. Beautiful. The Voice. You're very beautiful.
So there they are. They're busting this poor kid's chops about his English and making fun of him.
I don't even think the judges speak English.
That's truly American. That's The Voice right there.
Well, and there you go. And that, you know, Tolo estimates that 80% of Afghanistan tunes in to watch it. Although, you know, they don't really have a Nielsen rating system over there just yet. So we just have to trust them.
Here's another amazing clip from one of their shows, Afghan Star, which Afghan Star is, it's been on for 9 seasons, and it's basically American Idol, complete with their bad audition shows. Okay, but all right.
Yeah, I love the sound effects.
This is progress?
Yes! Look, I know it doesn't seem like it, but the very fact that you can have a public contest in Afghanistan and people can lose and then still live to tell about it, that's epic. All right? All right? And the fact that they have women on TV, they're on TV and they're not wearing burqas and they're singing and they have jobs. This is huge for Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't think those strides can be overlooked because 12 years ago that wasn't happening. And this is all with the help of U.S. funding over the last 12 years.
Just over a decade ago, singing was banned by the Taliban. Singing! And not only was it banned, it was punishable by stoning.
Right. And now women are singing on TV. So I'm a big proponent of rock and roll and blue jeans diplomacy, and I think it's working here.
Well, Afghanistan even has its own media mogul now. The head of the Moby Group, his name is Saad Mohseni. He's basically Afghanistan's Rupert Murdoch.
Right. Well, you know, that's not very far off from the truth. Part of his funding comes from Rupert Murdoch's news corporation.
Right. They are friends, apparently. They're fellow Aussies. But how – okay, so my question then is how can anything tied to Rupert Murdoch be positive for culture?
Yeah, I know. But here's a clip of Mohseni talking about TV in Afghanistan.
So in a place like Afghanistan, people gather around the television set, a bit like the 1950s in the U.S. It's the thing to do to have dinner, watch television, discuss the programs, and then go to sleep. And people really have nothing much else to do besides watch television. People can't go to restaurants. They can't go to the theater. So for us, the important thing is to keep it fairly general. Now, of course, the market will become fragmented as, you know, people have access to more television sets, to internet. And, you know, we're already recognizing that. So we've launched a 24-hour news channel, for example, in Afghanistan. As we see things, we will probably have a sports channel. We'll probably have a children's channel in the years ahead.
So you see how right now TV's creating this shared cultural experience that doesn't revolve around blowing things up.
Some would say he's just profiting by dumping mindless entertainment on Afghanistan and spreading Western propaganda.
Well, sure, but that's not always a bad thing. And if the alternative is blowing things up, I pick mindless entertainment every time. I just think that the more ways people can make money in Afghanistan, the better. It's a landlocked desert with mountains. You can grow things, but it costs a fortune to export them. You know, there's no shipping port. You either have to use the roads, which are dangerous and time-consuming, or you have to fly the goods out, which is expensive.
Well, that's why the opium trade became so big. It was cost-effective.
Yeah, it was just economics. You know, and when they shut that down, terrorism became big business. So
right.
I just think the more peaceful alternatives we can come up with, and the more peaceful and, more importantly, prosperous alternatives that can be created in Afghanistan, the better it's going to be for them. And maybe, you know, they need more Rupert Murdochs right now.
Not everyone in Afghanistan thinks it's so great. One guy in Parliament, Abdul Settar, called for a jihad against The Voice and these other shows. He said the show brings shame to our community and ruins our Islamic and Afghan dignity and culture.
Yeah. You know, the old guard's going to fight against a lot of this. And look, we had this in Iraq, too. I saw this firsthand with investigative journalism. You know, that didn't exist under Saddam Hussein's rule. You criticize anyone in power under Saddam Hussein, and you were killed. And that usually nips it in the butt.
Pretty much.
But once Iraqis got used to this idea of an independent media, and then more and more Iraqis fought for it, you know, then it took hold and the culture began to shift. And that takes time, and that happens over time. And I think that there's a shift happening in Afghanistan right now.
Well, we have another clip from Saad Mohseni talking about this, and I think it really puts the social change aspect in perspective.
I mean, obviously, we've learned from our mistakes, and we do push the envelope sometimes too far, and we have to, I suppose, to step back a bit. But ultimately, I mean, the country is very conservative, hasn't been exposed to too many things. But, you know, every single day that we push a little bit, you know, we've made an advance, and that to us is very important because media can play such an important role in terms of facilitating social change. The country, how it perceives itself since, say, 2002 is a very different country.
Look, we're running out of time, but I have to plug my favorite new Afghan show. It's called Eagle 4, and it's Afghanistan's version of 24. And they don't just have Jack Bauer. They have their own version of The Office, which takes place in the Ministry of Garbage.
That's amazing. I love that. It's called The Ministry. Man, I don't think I want to see what their version of Breaking Bad looks like.
It would probably just look like Afghanistan. terrifying.
So there you have it. Who would have thought TV in Afghanistan might be one of the keys to normalizing relations in the region?
Just give everyone TV and Twitter. We'll have things wrapped up there in no time. Keep checking our Tumblr this week, because we're going to put up some of these YouTube videos, because you really have to see them.
For now, we want to thank our producer, Shelley Lewis, our executive producer in charge of all producing, and Greg Russ, our sound engineer.
Yes, he's in charge of all sounding. Please subscribe to our Tumblr, follow us on Twitter, at WTFAW Show, at Kevin Janis, and at Ben Ari Lee.
And now we're on SoundCloud, so check us out there. I'm Kevin Janis.
I'm Ben Ari Poulton.
Please join us next time when we try to figure out, where the fuck are we?
That was Where the F Are We? And this is Jeff Chrysler of Cheater and the Rude. Tune in next week. Check out our archives. Twitter us at Jeff Chrysler, KREISLER, or at Rude Pundit, or Rudy Pundit, PPINDT, whatever. And stick around for the final edition radio hour right here on the Progressive Radio Network. We have a catchphrase, and we want you to learn it.